Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Andrea Taylor about A Twist of Fate, ATS. So, what can you tell me about A Twist of Fate?
A Twist of Fate, ATS, is a nonprofit patient group for arterial tortuosity syndrome, which is a very rare connective tissue condition that affects all of the connective tissue in the body. It's known for causing the arteries to grow too long, kink, and twist. But as we progress and we learn more, it's also one of the primary issues is the corneas in the eyes degenerating and causing extremely low vision or complete vision loss.
So when you say it's very rare, do you know about how many people are affected?
Right now, we're trying to work with other groups to find out what our real numbers are in the U.S. We only have about 25 families in the United States and about 100 worldwide.
So how do you go about reaching out to the patient community to let them know about your work?
Well, we have a website, and we try to reach out that way, but we're also we're listed with NIH, all the big national organizations for rare conditions, and international organizations as well. We have a Facebook page. We have a closed Facebook group for patients and families that have ATS, and they've asked for it to be closed for privacy and concerns that way, because we do talk about our kids and our families. A lot of it is word of mouth through providers. When they have positive hits on the gene, then they start, you know, doing their research and reaching out to their providers and to myself as well.
Are there any challenges in working with the medical community and providers to raise awareness about this condition? In terms of raising awareness about ATS?
Now, I don't believe that there is, but when I started, my son was diagnosed in 2010, and so he was really the first person in the U.S. to have had what's called pulmonary patchplasty, where they open the chest and reconstruct a pulmonary artery. And so he's the first one known to have had that done, and I had a little bit of medical background, and when we suspected that Aiden had arterial tortuosity syndrome, his providers there at Arkansas Children's Hospital were doing everything they could to research it, but back then there was very few journal articles about it. And so we came together as a team, really, and that's where it all began. Back then, it was very difficult to find any other patients that had ATS, and it was quite a few months before we realized that there was other people in the U.S. besides Aiden.
So, some rare conditions tends to be that a patient might get a misdiagnosis before finding out what's actually going on. You ever encountered this in providing supports?
We find this all the time, and so we're really pushing that genetic testing is so important in the medical community because there's other conditions like ATS, like Marfan's, Ehlers-Danlos, Williams syndrome, different conditions that, you know, kind of in some ways have overlapping symptoms. There, we find it all the time that people are misdiagnosed. As genetic testing becomes more and more popular, people are turning to that first. The diagnostic odyssey is really changing for patients. It seems to be like things are moving along a little bit more smoothly. But genetic testing has to be at the forefront to distinguish between the different connective tissue conditions to verify it's really ATS.
So, in your time providing support, what's been the greatest success you've seen?
Are you asking providing support for patients or?
Just in general, in your time with A Twist of Fate, what's been the greatest success you've seen?
Honestly, there's been so many just extraordinary things that have happened with A Twist of Fate. From the very beginning, I felt it was very important to have physicians and patients at the forefront of all of the research and all of the gatherings that we had. So we really created like a family atmosphere. And when we have host our in-person conferences, you know, our doctors will come have dinner with us at night. Sometimes we'll have a dance or different things like that. We send pictures to the doctors often. We really try to make a connection between the families and the doctors. One, so the families are not afraid to reach out to the providers and ask those really difficult questions. And two, the providers see those with ATS or the families more than just a chart or a statistic. They're people with lives and, you know, they have extracurricular activities. And, you know, we try to, that's the most, one of the most amazing parts. Another one I would say was our first conference we held, we received a grant and we received it right away, which is pretty unheard of for a new nonprofit. And we were able to fly people in from around the world, doctors, patients, families, everything. And to see the kids together, especially the teenagers, it was like for the first time they had an aha moment that there are other people like me. And to see these kids just gleam, and it is really like a family reunion now when we all get together, because there's nobody that understands it like somebody else that's going through it.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the ongoing need for this work, what would you say?
There's actually so much I would like to say on that particular point. It's because of A Twist of Fate and the drive behind the organization that we have pulled together against unbelievable odds, the providers, the patients, the researchers. We really have a hand in everything, and we try very hard to make the patients first. We just wish there was more funding for research. The funding was easier to get, that we had more researchers that were interested in ATS. We have lots of areas that have been under-discovered that we just really need to bring more people on board, and we are constantly working to do that.
So you were telling me about something remarkable you saw that had been created through your work on your trip to Belgium.
Yes, we started the first international ATS multidisciplinary clinic in Ghent, Belgium, at the University of Ghent with Dr. Bert Callewaert and his team. We were able to have exclusive access and to see the zebrafish and the mouse models that had been created with the donations of tissue that we had given over the years, the different families we would give skin biopsy tissues. I think there's been some muscle donated and some arterial tissue and things. And to be able to go in there and see how all of that comes together from the donation of the cells, how they process things in the lab, all the way to being able to create the animal models so that they can better understand our condition is absolutely the most amazing thing, because you can read about it, you can see the journal articles, but until you're standing in that lab and you see all of that come to fruition, it is the most amazing experience that I have ever experienced.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, sir.
The next segment of our show, we'll hear from Taliatha McGinnis from the Fetal Health Foundation. So, can you tell me a little bit about Fetal Hope?
We had a name change a number of years ago. We are the Fetal Health Foundation, and I am Taliatha McGinnis, the Executive Director of the Foundation. We are a parent-founded nonprofit organization that supports patient families when they have received a fetal syndrome diagnosis. Sometime, early to mid-pregnancy, something is going on that would put their pregnancy as like a high-risk type pregnancy, and their baby is diagnosed with a fetal syndrome, there is no known cause. We know that there are a little over 4,000 fetal syndromes out there right now, but there is no known cause for most all of them. Obviously, there are various treatments depending on which diagnosis or fetal syndrome they receive. And we basically support these patient families by educating them on their diagnosis so that they better understand what they're up against, as well as helping them understand what treatment options are available, as well as the fetal centers within the U.S. as well as around the world that might treat these fetal syndromes for them and help them, get to a successful labor and delivery, and obviously hold their baby in their arms.
So what are some of the more common fetal syndromes, and how do they impact both mother and child?
So some of the most common ones are twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. Actually, that was the fetal syndrome that myself, as well as our founders, Lonnie and Michelle Summers, experienced, and that's sort of the reasoning behind starting the Fetal Health Foundation. I can speak specifically to that one, obviously, because I can relate, but we were around 14 weeks into our pregnancy when we were being monitored for TTTS. It's a twin pregnancy, and so they were monitoring through ultrasound, and Doppler, and that was pretty much weekly at that point. And at 17 weeks is when we had a confirmed diagnosis, and we were sent from Charlotte, North Carolina area down to Florida to meet with a fetal surgeon and have surgery to go in and basically try to sever the shared blood vessels. So many of these moms, once receiving a diagnosis or being suspected of having a diagnosis of a fetal syndrome, they will be monitored pretty much weekly until the doctor feels that it's time for whatever treatment it might be. And it varies depending on the fetal syndrome. Like I said, TTTS is the main one and the reasoning behind why we started the foundation. Some of the other ones that we see often or help support patient families with would be SIUGR, which has to do with growth restriction, and that's another twin pregnancy type syndrome. We have HLHS, which is a hypoplastic left heart syndrome. We have LUDO, which is a bladder obstruction syndrome. CDH, which is another heart thing. So it just varies. There's just a lot of syndromes. Sometimes we are reached out to by a family that, presents us with a syndrome that is even more rare, and we don't, typically, have a lot of information on that. And so we have to rely on our partnerships with the fetal centers in order to, get them more information on their diagnosis and obviously help them get into the right hands for treatment care.
So in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Not any particular success stories. We actually have a number of success stories. And that's another way that we also share hope and education awareness is through our blog. So you can visit our blog at any point in time, and you'll see a number of patient family success stories through a lot of our fetal center partners, you know, with various fetal syndromes. And so that's another nice thing. When patient families go onto our website and they are looking at a specific diagnosis, there will be links that take them right back to a patient family story so that they can see that there is hope, and there are, you know, treatments that are working and providing them success and, you know, carrying them on to labor and delivery so that they can actually, you know, hit those major milestones with their babies once they're born, you know, seeing them take their first steps and hearing their first words and things like that. We also have a pretty large social media presence. Facebook, we use Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So we interact with a lot of people through that. We work with our fetal center partners. I know I mentioned that earlier, but we work with fetal centers as well as children's hospitals around the country. And so they help us a lot with our messaging and putting the word out, you know, about how who we are and how we support patient families. So they are a big support in that process as well.
So how do you go about providing supports for a mother just receiving a possible diagnosis? I've got to imagine there's a huge mental health aspect to strain and the fear that would come with that.
Sure. And, you know, as the Fetal Health Foundation, we are a very small nonprofit organization. So unfortunately, we don't have, you know, counselors or bereavement sources or anything on staff, but we do have places that we can refer patient families when they reach out if that's what they're looking for. And it is often the case when a patient family has received a diagnosis maybe too late and they weren't able to have treatment and then maybe they experienced a loss, they will find us and reach out. And so we are able to put them in touch with people who can help them on that next step in their grief journey. But if a patient family will typically reach out either through email or through phone call, and we basically help them understand their diagnosis and see where they are in the process. It may be that they went in for a routine checkup in their pregnancy with their OBGYN and they received suspicion or maybe a confirmed diagnosis and they're looking for what those next steps should look like. Maybe their OBGYN isn't as familiar with that particular syndrome or where to send them. And so they come to us, you know, help in helping find, you know, that fetal center that might be able to treat and care for their particular situation. So we sort of serve as like a middleman or a liaison between the patient family and that fetal center or children's hospital, if you will, putting them in touch with them.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Advertise with CJAM 99.1 FM. We offer the most flexible and competitive rates for radio advertising in Windsor, Detroit. Our diverse programming can fit the needs of a range of organizations and businesses. Choose between daily rates for broad coverage or sponsor a show and target a specific audience. CJAM staff will work with you to craft your ad and choose the airtime that suits your needs. For more information, email statcjam@gmail.com, call 519-253-3000, extension 2525, or go to cjam.ca/advertise.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about the Fetal Health Foundation from Taliatha McGinnis, and a little bit about A Twist of Fate, ATS, from Andrea Taylor. In this segment of our show, Kevin Mead and Mark Yale will be telling us a little bit about pemphigus. So, what can you tell me about the IPPF?
So, the IPPF was formed in 1994 by a pemphigus patient. Her name was Janet Siegel, and she started the foundation because she wanted to be able to connect with other people that have the disease, and she had been recently diagnosed, and she knew that she probably wasn't the only one with this rare disease, and so she felt like, you know, she wanted to be able to connect with those people, but also be able to try to help them and provide them services that might help them deal with the rare condition.
So, how does pemphigus typically affect a person?
Yeah, so pemphigus and pemphigoid are they're sister diseases. They're two diseases that are considered autoimmune bullous skin diseases. So they're autoimmune diseases in nature. So the body basically attacks itself. It feels like it's being invaded by some foreign invader, and it sends out autoantibodies to fight whatever it thinks is attacking it, kind of the autoimmune response. And then it can't find anything when it gets out there because there really isn't anything that it's attacking. It's just, you know, the body is confused. The system is confused. And so it can't find anything to really attack. And so what it does is those antigens attach to proteins in the skin, and that causes the skin to separate and blister. And so that's why it's what they call it, that autoimmune blistering skin disease. And so the blisters form anywhere on the skin or mucosa. So it can actually be on your skin. It can be anywhere where your mucosa is, including your mouth, in your eyes, inside your nose, in your throat. So it can be a pretty devastating and a widespread disease activity, you know, depending on the person.
So when you say it's a rare condition, do you know about how many people are affected?
Yeah, so there haven't been any really comprehensive studies done in the United States. We estimate that there's about 20 to 30,000 people in the United States that have the condition, and then maybe 50 to 60,000 people worldwide. Again, it's, you know, these are just estimates. The incidence rate for pemphigus is about 1.7 for every 100,000. And pemphigoid actually is a little bit more common, that's about 3.4 per every 100,000. So, but both conditions certainly are considered to be rare. And of course, in the United States, rare is considered anything that's less than 200,000 people affected is considered a rare disease.
So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the supports that your organization is able to provide for patients?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, you know, our organization was formed to provide support for people, as I mentioned, that have these diseases. Back in 1994, of course, we've grown quite a bit since then. But, you know, the biggest support that we provide would be helping patients once they've been diagnosed with finding expert physicians in the field or physicians that understand how to treat these diseases, because most patients see on average between 5 and 10 physicians over a 10 to 12 month period just to get diagnosed. And so once they've been diagnosed, you know, sometimes they have a difficult time finding the proper treatment. And so we refer patients to doctors on our referral list. We've got over 300 doctors on our referral list now. So we refer patients to doctors, to experts that know how to treat the disease. We also connect patients with other patients or other people that have the disease. So we have a program called the Peer Health Coach Program that connects people one-on-one with other people that have their disease, to try to help them navigate the complexities and the difficulties that come along with the disease. So our Peer Health Coach program is certainly one of our signature programs. And then we also provide lots of educational support through our in-person or virtual conferences. We hold monthly webinars to educate patients, and we've got lots of written material on our website that's downloadable for people. They can download those resources to their computer. So lots of access about education about the condition and how to manage it.
So in your time with the IPPF, is there any success story that stands out for you?
Oh, gosh. quite a few, actually. But, I mean, I think one that really stands out to me was a story of a little boy that was affected with pemphigus that was living in Uganda. And we were contacted by actually a reporter from Uganda who had heard about this little boy that was living in a burned-out church in Uganda. And he had been kind of ostracized from his community. He was living by himself in this church, and the people in his village, thought that he was not curable, and they didn't really understand the disease and why he was having it. So this reporter reached out to us, and then contacted the family or the parents of the little boy and asked if we could kind of work with him to try to get him seen by a doctor in Uganda. And we were able to help facilitate that and obviously help facilitate treatment for him. And then he was able to, after several years, go into remission. And then he went on to go to school and live in an orphanage and live a normal life. So, that was kind of a huge success for us, but it was just, it was interesting to be able to see how these diseases are managed in other countries and how, we take for granted in the United States that we have a medical system and we have therapies and treatments available, but in other countries, that's not necessarily the case.
So at the time, in helping this little boy, do you find there were any myths in his country surrounding this condition? Anything that you worked to clear up?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that when people see somebody that have visible skin erosions or a skin condition, immediately they're afraid. They think, well, it might be contagious, especially in this age with COVID and the pandemic. So I think the big thing to remember, the myth that we try to make sure we communicate to people is that it's an autoimmune disease and it's not something that's communicable. It's not, you can't catch the disease. It's not contagious. So, that was certainly a huge learning opportunity for us to try to make sure we educate people in that country about it.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, I always hear that it's more difficult dealing with a rare condition. I can understand why that's so. It's just a footnote in some doctor's medical training somewhere. Chances are, they're not going to be as familiar with it. That being said, though, a person with a rare disorder is no less entitled to care or self-advocacy as anyone else in society. If you feel there is something wrong, you should look into it. Explore the possibilities. Make sure you find reputable information. And from there, reputable support. It's your life and your right to care. Fact is, sometimes you'll get that doctor who won't necessarily acknowledge a condition because they're not as familiar with it. It doesn't mean the buck stops there. It doesn't mean your right to be treated stops there. You have the perfect right to ask questions and to understand the nature of your situation. Not in terms of worst case scenarios, but in terms of what treatment options are available, what possibilities still exist. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.